We begin the program today with three stories you should know, our weekly feature that gives two well-informed guests and one radio host each the opportunity to present a story of the week. This week, two of those stories will invite you into the realm of fantasy, or at least fiction. I'm pleased to welcome back Rob Nyer. He is the senior baseball editor for Fox Sports, and Rachel Bachman of the Wall Street Journal. Hello to you both.
Hello, Bill.
Hi there.
Rob, I hope I haven't given away too much by suggesting that your story would involve fantasy. You're on.
Well, I don't think that it's a huge fantasy to suggest that the Chicago Cubs are going to win a world championship at some point in the next 4 or 5 years. I mean, they just got swept by the Mets in the National League Championship Series, which was a big disappointment for all their fans, obviously. But they are exceptionally well-positioned. If I had to bet on one team to win the World Series in the next 5 years, just one team, it would be the Cubs.
Wow, that is quite a statement. Rachel, based on either talent scouting or the thrumming of heartstrings across the nation, do you like the Cubs to win in your lifetime?
I think the Cubs are like that slot machine that goes 7-7 cherries, or cherries, cherries, 7. It makes you think that the next time is the one they're going to do it. Mm. You know, look at their history. They never do, and I know the talent is mounting and momentum is churning, but frankly, I'll believe it when I see it. I will not bet a dime on those guys.
All right, I'm going to side with you on this, Rob, my smart alecky comments notwithstanding. Lots of times, teams almost win before they win. The Cubs look terrific to me in the early part of the postseason, and I would have to go along with you. They are at least as likely as any other team to prevail over the next handful of years or so, and I hope that that mollifies all the people who told me to stop saying we're all better off if the Cubs lose because the myth is intact.
Well, you know, myths are great, and it was fun having the Red Sox around, having their myth for as long as we did. And the Cubs myth is fun, too, but just practically speaking, they might be in the playoffs every year for the next 5-6 years and still not win a World Series. In fact, there's a pretty good chance of that. But again, if you have to pick one team, they are the team to pick. They're loaded at the major league level with young players. They've got some fantastic prospects. They've got a great management team in place. They just have all the ingredients.
All right, I have the second of our three stories today, and mine is also fantasy-laden because I don't know how else to characterize what second baseman Daniel Murphy has been doing on behalf of the New York Mets. What fictional character has homered in 6 consecutive postseason games? Joe Hardy of Damn Yankees, Roy Hobbs of The Natural, Shoeless Joe from Field of Dreams? None of them. Daniel Murphy would be life imitating art, except that he's life leaving art in the dust. And this doesn't happen in any sport except baseball. Rachel, have I got that right?
I would say yes. In terms of the theatrical, absolutely. And I think one of the things that's so magical about baseball is the lack of a clock. You know, you really can say that anything can happen. Teams have come back from 9-run, 10-run deficits before. This just can't happen in football because the time runs out and the odds evaporate.
Rob, you're a baseball guy. Is this way too often misused adjective unbelievable appropriate for Daniel Murphy?
Oh, I think it is. It's often said that you can see something in every game if you're watching closely enough that you've never seen before. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, for the most part, true. And it's also true that if you watch the postseason closely every year in October, you'll see some players do something that you couldn't really imagine that that player could do, whether it's a pitcher throwing a couple of shutouts or whatever it might be. But Murphy is sort of beyond the pale what he's done. This is a player who hit 7 home runs in April and May and June and July combined. And I mean, it just, this is wildly unpredictable.
And you know, you say if in baseball, if you watch closely, then in any game you'll see something you've never seen before. You don't even have to be watching closely. Daniel Murphy's hitting home runs, and that's why I say it's bigger than life. I mean, a novelist creating Daniel Murphy doing this in the postseason would be told by his editor to go back and write something that was credible because this is silly.
Well, I think the best example I can think of is Joe Hardy in Damn Yankees.
In Damn Yankees, yeah.
Because I think he hits 530 or something for the season.
Yeah, but then he turns old at the end, sliding into home.
So it only works in fiction when there is actually magic involved. Mm-hmm. Most of the time there isn't. Most of the time the novelist or the movie maker tries to frame it in reality, and it's difficult to do that with Daniel Murphy.
Rachel, your candidate for three stories you should know is not the least bit fantastic or fictional, and it has to do with safe bicycling, right?
Yes, that's true. Bike helmet laws seem obvious, right? Helmets help protect your head, so why not require them? But cycling advocates are pushing back against these laws because they say they hurt the kind of casual riding that they're trying to encourage, first by decreasing ridership. And that, in turn, hurts the public, they say, because fewer people are exercising, which, of course, is very important. They say it also could make cycling less safe overall because studies show that the more cyclists there are in a given area, the fewer crashes there are. And they think that's because cycling has a calming effect. You know, cars are used to seeing cyclists and they slow down. So it's a counterintuitive argument, but some people say all ages helmet laws actually do more harm than good.
I wear a helmet when I ride my bike, which is almost every day, just in case I hit a pothole and go sailing over the handlebars, although also my daughter told me to wear it, so I do. I do whatever she tells me. And I must admit I shudder a little bit when I see bicyclists without helmets speeding down Commonwealth Avenue here in Boston. Rob, bike helmet or not bike helmet?
Well, it's funny, Bill. I used to be one of those idiots speeding down Commonwealth Avenue without a helmet. And in fact, I've never worn a helmet, but I have a young daughter. She's too young to know. When she's old enough to notice, I'm sure that I will wear a helmet. And I understand the science. I really enjoyed Rachel's article. I read all the comments under the article too, which was a real eye-opener. And the thing is, people on both sides make a great deal of sense. I really think it comes down to a personal decision. What's right for you? What's right for your family? I think it's incredibly complicated, and people who think they know the answers don't.
Well, this is a very polarizing issue. Obviously, some people say, you know, you idiots, how could you not advocate helmet use? And other people are saying, look, there's a bigger picture here. And what we really should be focused on as people who want to advocate cycling is creating more safe spaces to ride. That's what they have in Europe. And that's the reason why so many Europeans have fewer injuries on bikes, even though most of them are not wearing helmets, because there are better, safer places to ride.
My guests for our weekly roundtable, Three Stories You Should Know, have been Rob Nyer, baseball expert for Fox Sports, and Rachel Bachman of The Wall Street Journal. Thanks to both of you.
My pleasure.
Thanks so much, Bill.